A year later I got a letter from him saying that during his absence a new avenue had been opened, under that name, into the park, and on the triangle there had been erected a memorial, the name of the man being engraved on it, just as he had been told at the séance. On another occasion an artist friend was away painting a picture, in connection with the raising of funds for a memorial. He was the guest of the local provost or magistrate. This dignitary had lost a son in the war, and my friend, in conversation, had told him of the wonderful messages coming through the mediumship of Mr. Sloane. The gentleman was very anxious for a sitting, and my friend arranged with me to bring him and his wife to one. I was a little late in meeting them, and in consequence the usual introductions were dispensed with, so that when we got into the house I was a little confused, and had completely forgotten his name, and could not introduce him to the medium, who just laughed and said, "Any friend of Mr. McCulley is welcome." I found out afterwards Sloane's impression was that the gentleman did not want his name mentioned. However, the sitting had not long commenced when the medium, now under the control of Whitey, rose from his chair, and, walking over to the stranger, said, "Your son says you have something upon you that belongs to him." The gentleman said, "Watch? Pocketbook? Etc.," to which the answers were, "No, no." Then the medium started stroking the man's shoulder, and Whitey said, "Your son is stroking your jacket." "Yes," said the gentleman, "I have my son's suit on." The conversation went on, evidence piling on evidence, and, going over to the mother, the voice, speaking through the trumpet, said, "Do you remember, mother, the foot? 101. Prints on the linoleum? I caught it for that." It appeared that, while on his last leave, he wanted to take his sister skating. The mother objected, as the sister had a cold. However, when the family had retired, the brother and sister had gone off to the ice. On their return the sister had taken off her shoes, and her feet, being wet, had left footprints on the polished linoleum, which the mother spotted in the morning. After the termination of the war, a lady came to see me, with very strong family introductions. Could I take her to a séance, she asked me repeatedly, but the difficulty was that there were so many anxious to get in and so few vacancies, as only three or four new people could be introduced each night, and every member of the circle had friends anxious to get in. However, it was arranged, and, accompanied by my wife and myself, the lady was introduced. The anxiety of the lady was caused by the fact that her brother, who had been at the war, was reported missing and could not be traced. When the sitting commenced, her brother was not long in coming through, and told of his death. As he described it, he was blown to bits. Later another voice came through saying his name was Cameron. Both my wife and myself knew a lad named Cameron who had been killed, and, as no one in the circle claimed him, we said he might be a friend of ours, but the trumpet kept over by the visitor and persisted he was for her, but she denied all knowledge of anyone named Cameron. The voice said he had served with her brother, but he had been taken prisoner and died in Germany. Of course it had to be taken as said, but the sequel was that our friend, some time later, got a letter from people named Cameron, saying they had heard that she was inquiring through foreign agencies about her brother, and would she be good enough to ask about their son who had been serving, and was posted missing at the same time as her brother. Evidently this was the Cameron who spoke to our friend along with her brother, all unknown to her that her brother had a friend of this name. This concludes Mr. McCulley's report. Any inquirer, who wishes to pursue this subject of evidence further, will find 435 pages of Vice Admiral Usman Moore's book, entitled The Voices, devoted to it. This is a record of his, and other people's experiences with. 102. The well-known direct voice medium Mrs. Rhett. I have, in the previous chapters, given information purporting to come from voices, either through the trumpet, or apart altogether from the trumpet. Sloane, however, is one of the finest trance mediums in the country, and sometimes a communicator, if he cannot get his message through correctly by direct means, controls the medium or sends the message through one of Sloane's regular controls. I have had messages given partly one way and partly the other. However, for long continued conversation, transcommunications are the best, as they are more sustained, uninterrupted conversations lasting often for over an hour. In this way I have received much detailed information as to how the direct voice is produced, what the etheric body really is, the conditions existing in the world beyond and the relative structure of the substance of which that world is composed, as compared with our physical matter. A stenographer present has recorded what was said. First of all, I am told that the whole universe is made up of substance of various degrees of density and vibratory activity, that this fills all space, in which life exists in varying degree of development. What we sense here on Earth is only matter vibrating within certain fixed limits, surrounding, interpenetrating, attached to, and moving with our Earth. Is another world of etheric matter in a higher state of vibration. Consequently, it is unperceived by our senses. In our physical world, the real, or enduring, body is an etheric body, which, at the moment of our conception, commences to gather round it, or, in other words, clothes itself with physical matter slow in vibration. The etheric body is the framework onto which physical matter is attached. This etheric body is composed of substance quite in tune with the etheric matter of the next plane, but so long as it is attached to physical matter it is limited by the limitations of such matter. At death, however, the etheric body is released from its physical covering, and continues functioning quite naturally in the etheric world, where everything is as real to it as it was when in the physical. The etheric body is, in every particular, a duplicate of our physical body. And so it can be understood how, if conditions are given for an etherian to rematerialize his organs of speech, it is possible to vibrate again our atmosphere and make his voice heard. The mind, 103, which controls the etheric duplicate carries over with it, I am told, everything but the physical covering. Character, memory, affection, personality, etc., go with the mind, because they relate to the mind and not to the physical body. The etheric world is, in many respects, similar to this world. Our senses there respond as they do here. But, owing to the finer structure of etheric substance, the mind can work on it in a way it cannot do here. Hence it is in this sense a mental world, but our present worlds is also a mental world as I tried to show in Chapter 3. In this next state of consciousness, the inhabitants find themselves in surroundings much the same as we experience here. There grow trees and flowers, but there is no death such as we understand it. All vegetable life, instead of decaying, dematerializes and disappears from sight. The surroundings of the inhabitants are greatly conditioned by their thoughts, and so their houses and mode of life are much their own making. This, I am told, does not constitute the next state to be one purely of mental projections, because its inhabitants have the same sensations as we have, as they can feel, touch and smell the flowers, they can gather them, and, when walking in the fields, they meet and talk with their friends. All on the same plane, I am told, can see and touch the same things. This is the reply I invariably received, when trying to find out whether this state was objective or subjective. There are many planes, but only those on the same plane experience the same sensations. I have, myself, experienced etherians present who talked to me, but they could not see each other, though they were in the same room, the explanation given being that they were in different planes of existence. These etherians are men and women, not vaporous spirits, but real, vital and tangible people, such as we mix with every day. Theirs is not a dream world, but one of objective reality, intensely real everything, music, art and all constructive work, being at a higher pitch than we can possibly understand. Great activity prevails, and everyone has his or her own work to do. Service to others, and fellowship, are the ethical standards which prevail there to a higher degree than here. There is a universal language, each and everyone can understand the other. It is inherent. Nationalities generally live together and speak their own language. But there is one. 104. Language common to all. My informants were insistent on the point that with them discipline was rigid, and all had to obey those in authority. Everyone is under the authority of higher Aetherians, whose laws and instructions must be carefully obeyed. It is a well-ordered and well-governed state. There is no night as we understand it, and the light they get does not come from our sun. If they want rest they can get subdued light, but not darkness as we experience it. When asked as to their food, I was told that they ate and drank just as we did, and enjoyed the same sensations, but their eating and drinking were different from what we understand by these words. They enjoy much more freedom of movement, as they get from place to place at a speed we cannot comprehend. On other occasions, when I put questions about the composition of our minds, I was told that mind was substance in a very rapid state of vibration, and that at death, though we left on earth our physical brain, yet the mind in etheric life functioned through the etheric duplicate of the brain which survived death along with the rest of the etheric body. All life persists. Animals as well as human beings survive death, and each enters into a state harmonious to the vibrations of each. Affection on the part of an animal for an individual can bring the two together again after death. But, without this bond of affection, they would function unsensed by each other in their own plane. Thus, life is indestructible, a great universal force is everywhere, in everything, in some form or another. But only when in conjunction with the physical can it be perceived by our limited sense perceptions. Physical science deals with physical matter, something we can sense. Psychical science deals with etheric matter. We cannot sense etheric matter, but Aetherians can. Its atomic structure, I am told, differs from that of our matter. It may be ether, or something akin to ether, for all we know to the contrary. Physics and psychics are twin brothers, which makes it easier for a physicist to understand psychics than scientists in other branches of knowledge. Hence the whole tendency of physical science today is towards the view that not physical but etheric substance is the basic structure of the universe. Only the ignorant affirm that just what we sense is real. 105. That beyond this range of sense nothing exists. Our range of sense, our sight, our touch, our smell and hearing are limited to the last degree. We know that the spectrum of the spectroscope proves the very limited range of our ordinary vision, and that further ranges of vibrations of what might be color, could we see them, extend on either side. It has been said that the perceived vibrations, as compared with the unperceived, are much less than an inch is to a mile. Therefore, it is evident that there lies an enormous region for other life to inhabit around and within this world of ours, a region quite beyond our normal sense perceptions. Until one clearly understands that our senses here only respond to a very limited range of vibrations, what we term physical matter, that outside these there is a universe full of life which responds to a higher range of vibrations, unreal to us, but more real to it than physical matter, one cannot grasp or understand in all its fullness the psychical phenomena which develop through mediumship. Chapter 11 Nights of Instruction. Our object in life should be to accumulate a great number of grand questions to be asked, and resolved in eternity. Now we ask the sage, the genius, the philosopher, the divine, but none can tell, but we will open our queries to other respondents. We will ask angels, redeemed spirits, and God. Foster. After I became convinced, not only of the medium's honesty, but also of the identity of those who purported to communicate, I was naturally anxious to know something of their mode of living, their surroundings, and how it was possible for them to return to Earth and make their voices heard. In the four previous chapters I have summarized some of the information I have been given, which proved to me the identity of those who spoke. In this, and the next two chapters, I shall confine myself to three sittings I had, when the questions I put, and the answers I received to my inquiries, referred to their life and surroundings and their mode of communication. The information. 106. With which I deal is from notes taken down at the time by my stenographer, and is typical of those sittings I had for the purpose, not of seeking tests as to identity, but information regarding the etheric world about and around us. These nights of instruction were particularly valuable and impressive, as, except for my stenographer, I was alone with the medium. I had, therefore, the opportunity to put questions, and receive replies, without the feeling that I was in any way monopolizing those in the etheric world who had come to meet and speak to others besides myself. At ordinary seances, the more there were of us, the greater was the evidence, especially when strangers were present. On those occasions, all my attention was given to proving identity, and that those who spoke were really those they purported to be. But in these times I had alone with Sloane, my mind was directed more to receiving instruction and general information. Then it was that my etheric friends, though present, kept silent, and allowed others to speak who had greater knowledge than they had yet attained. On these occasions some voices spoke to me which I did not recognize, and no acquaintanceship was claimed. They were cultivated and had a command of language far beyond the capacity of the medium. In this, and the other two chapters which follow, I shall report three sittings, the first in December 1923, and the other two in January 1924. They are representative of a series of private sittings extending over a year. At the December sitting, my informant spoke in slow and measured tones, without a trace of accent. His delivery was impressive, and, although I could not see him, I visualized a man of dignified carriage, culture and education addressing me. Sloane, as usual on such occasions, was in deep trance, his hands held in mine, his head fallen down over his chest, and, except for various twitchings from time to time, he sat motionless. I sat facing him, Miss Miller, my stenographer, on my right at the table taking notes, and except for the three of us there was no one belonging to this world in the room, or for that matter in the house, as Sloane at this time was living alone. Footnote. Miss Miller used a notebook with embossed lines, made for the purpose of taking down shorthand in the dark. As a precaution, however, I locked the room door and put the key in my pocket. Miss Miller, moreover, is decidedly mediumistic, and this contributed in no small measure to the success of these private sittings, as the combination of her psychic powers with those of Sloane made conditions almost perfect. This first séance I am now reporting took place on 4th December 1923, at 7 p.m., and a few minutes after taking our seats and putting out the light, this strange male voice spoke to me as follows: "Mr. Findlay, the last time you sat with my medium you expressed the desire for information relating to our world. I have been requested by those who are responsible for what takes place here, to come tonight to help you in any way within my power. If you will ask me what you wish to know, I shall do my best to answer." This voice spoke from high up above my head. I was sitting facing Sloane, my hands holding his, my feet touching his feet. As it spoke I leaned forward to make certain it did not proceed from his lips, but there was not a sound nor a whisper. Ventriloquism could not account for it, as any ventriloquist will testify that this form of deception is impossible in the dark. I thanked the speaker for his kindness in coming, and the conversation proceeded in the form of question and answer, each reply being instant. Question: here on earth we can only appreciate the physical, namely, the earth, the sun and stars. What is contained in what we call space? Answer: I can only answer you so far as my knowledge permits me. Interpenetrating your world is another world of substance in a higher state of vibration to the one you sense. The universe is one stupendous whole, but you only appreciate what you see and hear and feel. Believe me, there are other worlds of substance, finer than physical matter, in which life exists and of which you on earth can form no conception. Connected with your earth is this world to which I came after what you call death. Encircling your world are planes of different density, and these move in rotation with the rotation of the earth. Question: is your world, then, a real and tangible world? Answer: yes, it is very real to us, but the conditions in which we find ourselves depend on the condition of our mind. If we wish it, we can be surrounded by beautiful country. Our mind plays a large part in our life here. Just as we live in surroundings suitable to our mental development, so we also attract to ourselves minds of the same type. 108. As our own. Like attracts like in this world. So also like attracts like so far as your world and our world are concerned. The evil-minded here are attracted by the evil-minded in your world, and the good here by the good with you. We can, at will, take on earth conditions by lowering our vibrations. Our bodies become heavier and more perceptible to the human eye, which accounts for our being seen at times by those who have the faculty on earth of sensing our vibrations. Question: do all the inhabitants of your world get into contact with the earth from time to time? Answer: the higher and more developed we become, the less are we in touch with your world. The more development proceeds, the less do we think of the earth. It is all a question of desire. We can come into contact with earth conditions at will. If the will for doing so is absent, then we do not return to you. Question: do we always retain our individuality? Answer: think of a countryside with glens and hills. The rain falls, and gradually trickles down into small streams, which streams gather volume until they enter a brook, which brook in turn enters a river, which in turn enters a larger river and sweeps onward to the sea. Each individual can be compared to an atom in the raindrop. The atom retains form and individuality throughout the whole course, from the hill to the sea, and even in the sea it does not lose its individuality. So with us, we move onwards and onwards, always retaining our individuality until we merge into the sea of full understanding, when we become part of the divinity. Question: that is certainly a very clear illustration, but to go back for a moment to the reply you gave me in answer to my question about your world being tangible and real. You stated that your surroundings depended on the condition of your minds. Now, is your life purely a mental one, or can you touch and feel your surroundings just as we do here? In other words, is your world a material world like ours? Answer: our world is not material, but it is real for all that. It is tangible, composed of substance in a much higher state of vibration than the matter which makes up your world. Our minds can, therefore, play upon it in a different way than yours can on the material of your world. As our 109 mind is, so is our state. To the good their surroundings are beautiful, to the bad the reverse. Question: do you mean that you live in a dream world where everything appears real but is not? Answer: no, we do not live in a dream world. As I have said, we live in a real tangible world, though the atoms composing it differ from the atoms which made up your world. Our minds can act on this tangible substance in a way yours cannot do on your world. You live in a world of slower vibrations. Question: does each of you, therefore, live in a world of your own? Answer: everyone does, you do and so do I. But if you mean can each of us see and feel the same things? I answer, yes. All in the same plane can sense the same things. We have the same world as you have, but in a finer state. Question: can you touch what you see? Answer: yes, of course we can touch and feel and enjoy all the sensations you do. Question: do you eat and enjoy your food? Answer: yes, we eat and drink. But it is not what you mean by eating and drinking. To us it is a mental condition. We enjoy it mentally, not bodily as you do. Question: I cannot see you. But, if I could, what would you look like? Answer: I have a body which is a duplicate of what I had on earth, the same hands, legs and feet, and they move the same as yours do. This etheric body I had on earth interpenetrated the physical body. The etheric is the real body and an exact duplicate of our earth body. At death we just emerge from our flesh covering and continue our life in the etheric world, functioning by means of the etheric body just as we functioned on earth in the physical body. This etheric body is just as substantial to us now, as the physical body was to us when we lived on earth. We have the same sensations. When we touch an object we can feel it. When we look at something we can see it. Though our bodies are not material, as you understand the word, yet they have form, and feature and expression. We move. from place to place as you do, but much more quickly than you can. Question: what is the mind? Is it something apart from the brain? 110. Answer: certainly it is. You bring your mind over here with you. You leave your physical brain on Earth. Our mind here acts on our etheric brain and through it on our etheric body, just as your physical brain acts on your physical body. Question: will you tell me something about your world? Answer: all in the same plane can see and touch the same things. If we look at a field, it is a field to all who look at it. Everything is the same to those in the same condition of mental development. It is not a dream. Everything is real to us. We can sit down together and enjoy each other's company just as you can on Earth. We have books and we can read them. We have the same feelings as you have. We can have a long walk in the country and meet a friend whom we have not seen for a long time. We all smell the same aroma of the flowers and the fields as you do. We gather the flowers as you do. All is tangible, but in a higher degree of beauty than anything on Earth. Here we have no decay in flower or field as you have. Vegetable life just stops growing and disappears. It dematerializes. There is a similarity here to what you call death. We call it transition. In time, as we develop sufficiently, we pass onto another plane from which it is not so easy to come back to Earth. This we call the second death. Those who have passed through the second death can come back and visit us in our plane, but we cannot go to them until we have passed through it also. This is what your Bible calls the second death. Those who have passed through it do not often come and speak to you on Earth directly by materializing, as I am doing now, but they can pass their messages on to me, or someone in my plane, and we pass them on to you. Question: you told me your world revolved with this world. How does this happen, and also, do you travel with the Earth round the sun? Answer: the spheres nearest the Earth do so because we belong to this planet. We cannot see your world revolving in space, because we revolve with you. We cannot see your world until we take on Earth conditions. In taking these on, we slow down our vibrations, and come through from one plane to another, until we get our vibrations down more to a level with those of which your world is composed. We can all come down, but we cannot go up beyond our plane until we are prepared for the change. 111. Question: what would happen to you if this Earth came into collision with another star or planet and was destroyed? Answer: it would make no difference to us. Our world is quite independent of physical matter. Question: do we reincarnate again on Earth? Answer: now that is a question I find difficulty in answering. I have known no one who has. I passed over many years ago, and I have round about me those who lived thousands of years ago on Earth. That is all I can say, because my knowledge does not permit me to say more. Question: do dogs, cats and other animals survive death? Answer: yes, sir, most emphatically yes, they do survive. No life becomes extinct, but they do not survive in the spirit world, as we term it. They have a spirit world of their own making. They do not exist in a spirit world as man exists. If, however, say a dog has affection for a human being, it can get into his or her surroundings if both have left your Earth. Question: is your vegetation similar to ours? Answer: something similar, but much more beautiful. Question: I have noticed in my many conversations with different people, that those who had titles on Earth never give them, only just their Christian and surnames. Sir William Barrett, for instance, asked me to drop the sir when speaking to him. Answer: yes, that is correct. Earth titles mean nothing to us. As soon as those bearing them arrive here, these prefixes are dropped. They are meaningless to us. Question: what are your houses like? Answer: our houses are just as we care to make them. Your Earth houses first were conceived in your mind, and then physical matter was put together to make them as your mind first saw them. Here we have the power to mold etheric matter as we think. So our houses are also the products of our minds. We think and we construct. It is a question of thought vibration, And so long as we retain these vibrations, we can hold the object, which during this time is objective to our senses. Question: what languages do you speak? Answer: there are the various earth languages spoken here, such as English, French and German, but they are conveyed from mind to mind mentally. Communication takes place mentally from one to another, not only by the 112.